Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year again. It is Wednesday, January 20, 2016, and this is the Dallas City Council briefing. We will call the meeting to order at 9:06, and we will start with an invocation with Bishop Ray R. Sutton, Rector of Church of the Holy Communion. The Reverend Sutton serves as Dean of Providence and Ecumenical Affairs of the Anglican Church of North America. He is also Bishop Corridor within the Diocese of Mid-America of the REC and Rector of the Church of the Holy Communion in Dallas, District 12, and Mrs. Grayson's the representative. A Dallas resident since he was 13, Bishop Sutton receives his BFA from Southern Methodist University and his Master's of Theology from Dallas Theological Seminary from 1976 to 1991. He served as a parish minister. Following this, he pursued doctoral studies in a Coventry University program associated with Oxford University, where he received his PhD. He served as professor and dean of the Reformed Episcopal Seminary in Philadelphia and continues as an adjunct professor today. He has authored 4 books on theology, his most recent being Signed, Sealed, and Delivered, A Study of Holy Baptism. Everybody has stood except for me. I will stand up, and if we would please welcome Bishop Sutton.
Thank you. Let us pray. We pray, O Lord, for your blessing on all those in our community who are responsible for our civic welfare, health, and security, especially these good council members. May your spirit guide these council members that they may have a care only for what will promote good government, and to all others in positions of responsibility, give such a sense of duty that no self-interest shall turn them from it. We also remember before you those who are employed in our service in this community in dangerous work. Watch over them, protect them, keep them safe. Help these dear council members, each one, to do well the work that they have to do for the good of all. In your name we pray, amen. Thank you.
Please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance led by our Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Wilson.
Please be at me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, everyone. I just want to make sure I let everybody know how we're going to have our meetings today. We will start with our executive session, and then we will come back and continue with our program or our agenda. And it is now 9:09 a.m., January 20th, 2016. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to discuss the qualifications, criteria, and selection for the position of the city attorney. If y'all would please step out, and we will let you know when we will begin.
Good morning, it's 9:28, January 20th, 2016. The City Council will now go back into open session. We met under closed session 551074, Texas Open Meetings Act, to discuss qualifications, criteria, and selection for the position of City Attorney. Thank you very much. Ms. Rios, we'll begin with our morning speakers.
Good morning. Your speakers for the morning will begin with Jackie Staley, John Bloom, Charles Wu, James Wong, and Hannah Finn. I'll now recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on the monitor. When your time is up, please stop. address all comments to Mayor Rawlings. If you have any handouts, you may go ahead and hand it to the guard to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker is Jackie Staley.
My subject that I'm speaking on has to do with your urban garden ordinance that was passed back in March. I have some serious concerns about that. I've run into some issues that have to do with that. My neighborhood has run into some issues that have to do with it. It doesn't appear to be adequate in that it has things that it allows, but it does not have an amount of things that it disallows accordingly, and it's being abused in one particular instance that I'm well familiar with. You have some photos that I made. I'm sorry I wasn't able to do the entire, one for everybody, but my ink didn't permit it. What's happening with this is that the city code people are evidently having a lot of problems enforcing this ordinance because they don't understand it. This man, who you'll see the photographs of in particular, is saying this is an urban garden. So, it looks like a pile of I don't know what, because it's pretty terrible if you look at those and see. He's having wood chippers from tree people dumped all over this lot, and he's picking up every bale of leaves that are out there and grinding them all up and everything. And there's about 80 pallets stored on there. That's a vacant lot. It looks to me like on a vacant lot ordinance that it's prohibitive to be able to have all of that, because if you were on a regular vacant lot and not calling it a garden, would you be able to have knee-high weeds and things and then say to yourself, gee, this is an urban garden, and code enforcement says, well, we can't do anything about it? There has to be some criteria that's allowable for a garden and not, a storage, because illegal storage, as far as I know, pursuant to 41 and 41A, is not legal on a vacant lot. I'd like to know also, because it calls for being able to build outbuildings, and the outbuildings are 200 square feet or smaller. So, but it has 10% coverage, and on 10% coverge on an average 50 by 150 foot lot, you're looking at 750 feet. A square feet of allowable outbuildings. Now, that to me is, kind of not very well thought out or written. I know that this wasn't what y'all intended, because I'm sure everybody was thinking, gee whiz, we're going to see a plethora of wonderful gardening going on with all kinds of green area and everything else. But, what we're looking at here is a total disaster, as far as I can see, and I don't think anybody else can look at it and see, but I had repeatedly talked to code enforcement, because that's right across the street from me. They said, we cannot, do anything other than where we're at, because this calls for, an additional.
Thank you, Ms. Staley. I'm going to have Joey Zapata come around and talk to you.
Mayor, could
yes.
we have Joey answer this now?
Oh, okay.
So we can
please.
Hear this, because
everybody wants to hear.
Yeah.
Ms. Staley is talking.
He's working on it already.
About yeah. a concern that some of us have shared since we adopted this ordinance, which is, I think we got a little carried away. Mr. Zapata?
Ms. Staley's correct that when code first went out there, we mistakenly found no violation, but then she contacted our offices and we went back and revisited it. We visited with our building inspections department and found that indeed there were violations. The property owner needs to get a CO, and also, because it's an historic district, needs to get a certificate of appropriateness. So we've issued notices, and we're making them go through the process to get the appropriate permits.
Well, are our code enforcement people confused about this ordinance?
We made a mistake on the first inspection.
But they're clear, because Ms. Staley also mentioned the amount of outbuilding space that we allow in this urban garden. And so I think there's a number of issues here that she brought up that are important for us to take another look at.
So, and as the mayor requested, I will do that.
if the mayor requests it? Mayor, would you request it?
He did request it.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
He said as the mayor requests it.
Oh, all right. So I said if the mayor requests it. Okay. Thank you for bringing this up to our attention, because a number of council members have shared some of your concerns, including Ms. Gates. Ms. Gates and I have shared concerns about this. So
I have one more thing that's a pretty serious issue.
Can I let my councilwoman speak just for a second?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Gates.
No, I was going to say thank you for bringing this to attention. This is exactly the discussion we had when we passed this ordinance of the concern. So I'm glad you brought it to our attention that this is the problem that we potentially anticipated.
All right. You had your 3 minutes, and we're going to deal with this. So I appreciate you coming down. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is John Bloom. Mr. Bloom will be followed by Charles Koo.
All right. Mr. Mayor and City Council, thank you for giving us this forum to speak. I am speaking in support of William Sow being reappointed to the DFW Board of Airport Board. So I think I'd like to start by saying, as a community, our strength really lies in our diversity. And history has shown us time.
Could you bring your mic up just a little bit? Thank you.
Apologize. So, history has shown us time and time again that when we don't have this diversity represented onto our leadership, we as a community suffer. So the Asian American community is one of the fastest demographics, or growing demographics, in North Texas. So it's important to remember these are our friends, these are our families, our neighbors, business owners, employees, and employers. Again, it's important to remember that they're also taxpayers and voters. And so while I hope that this, my opening invoked a bit of an emotional response from you, what I really want to do is focus on the statistics surrounding this issue, namely the financial effects onto Dallas and the surrounding areas. So on average, Chinese tourists spend more per capita than any other tourists in the world, and oftentimes spending as much as 50% of the cost of those trip dollars patronizing local businesses. Just to put statistics in perspective, they're poised to spend $265 billion in 2019. Now, while the U.S. is trending up as one of the more popular places to visit outside of Asia, make no mistake that we're in direct competition from these other cities like New York, like Los Angeles, like Chicago, to attract these tourism dollars here to the U.S. It's also important to note that Chinese millennials are making up almost 35% of this demographic. This is the newer generation. This is the opportunity for us to get in and show these people that we're very interested in having them visit, live, work, and play here in Dallas. So outside of just tourism, there's literally been billions of dollars that's imported into our economy just here recently into North Texas, and this is through the purchase of real estate, creation of businesses. This is also through direct investment into economic development programs like EB-5, of which William has personally helped bring hundreds of millions of dollars to North Texas. So really, what I'd like to summarize in is saying that I think we're really at an important crossroads here. This is maybe perhaps the most important time in recent history to put our best foot forward and really make the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex a premier location for these individuals to spend their tourism dollars, to immigrate to open businesses, to patronize our current businesses, to involve in our schools here. And I think that a good way that we can put our best foot forward as a community is reappointing William to the board of the DFW Airport. That's it.
Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Charles Koo. Mr. Koo will be followed by James Wong.
Good morning, Mayor Robbins, and members of the City Council. And my name is Charles Koo, live in 148 Red Oak Lane, Flowermount, Texas. And I'm here as past chair of the Greater Dallas Taiwanese Chamber of Commerce, together with U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce, American Chinese Professional Association, Asian American Citizens Council, Asian American Insurance Financial Professionals Association, Dallas Asian Real Estate Association of America, and many others, that we are here to ask you to reappoint William Cao to the DFW International Airport Board. I'm sure you have all the materials that you need, about William's work in the past 2 years. He is continue the legacy and the efforts by former chairman of the DFW International Airport Board, Mr. Robert Xu, in developing airport partnerships, direct flights, business relationships with China, Korea, and Taiwan. For example, I'm sure you know that Chengdu Airport, number 4 in China, asked William to help arranging a relationship with DFW Airport and then possibility of direct flight. And in Taiwan, 2015, Taiwan has become the hub for about 600 flights every day, weekly, to 35 destinations in China. And 3 of these 35 cities has been granted permission to international stopover transfer at Taipei. So all this, you know, is because of the work of William Cao. And then I have here a report from 2015, Texas Foreign Direct Investment from the governor's office. I'll read it to you that it says, foreign direct investment, leading countries for foreign direct investment, capital investment in Texas, South Korea, Canada, Germany, Taiwan, United Kingdom, Japan, Italy, France, and Netherlands. Leading countries for acquire and merger foreign direct investment projects in Texas. Canada, United Kingdom, Japan, Australia, China, Germany, France, Norway, South Korea, and Switzerland. I do not see Pakistan. I do not see India there. But I know my time is up, but please, I think William Cao is really is the best candidate. When you vote, please vote who is the best for the city of Dallas. And then William Cao is definitely deserve the merit Thank of you. Your choice. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Dr. Koo.
Your next speaker, James Wong. Mr. Wong will be followed by Hannah Finn.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor Rollins and Honorable Council members. I am James Wong, and I represent the 400 members of U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce in Dallas, and also represent the 400 signers on a recent petition that I sent out to you guys that was gathering support for the reappointment of William Cao onto the board of DFW Airport. Mayor Rollins, you have said it yourself not too long ago, quote, I have a vision to have DFW be the international business epicenter of Northern Hemisphere. And having DFW Airport at the center of all this, it is in my opinion that in order to become the epicenter, we need a board of directors that possesses the international scope, the international background and experience, and ultimately an international perspective that would cushion the impact of cultural diversity. We cannot be grateful enough for the instrumental role that the late Robert Xu, the chairman of DFW Airport Board, and William Cao have played, leading to the 3 daily nonstop flights to China. As a result, the flights not only will have a $200 million economic impact on the region every year, the underscoring impact of exposing the great Dallas business environment and the opportunity to Chinese investors is immeasurable. As my fellow speaker, Dr. Koo, had mentioned not too long ago, we have ongoing projects to establish more routes, bring more Chinese investors and spend money here in Dallas DFW area. We must continue the momentum by actively pursuing more routes to Asia and hence to the rest of Asia, China. In order to accomplish this, we need a voice on the board who could fully understand the potential of this opportunity. I hereby reaffirm our support for William Cao's reappointment onto the DFW Airport Board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Hannah Finn.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hannah Finn. I'm the president of Association of Chinese Professional in DFW area, one of the largest Chinese organization here for more than 22 years. And I myself is also a real estate agent and business owner. I live in Dallas for almost 20 years. So like many other Chinese professionals living here for a long time, we are very excited to see their rapid growing and many more investment opportunities coming from China this couple of years due to the direct flight. And investors in China got to know Dallas well because of direct flight, given their 10 years business visa, like a multiple entry coming to US and also the direct flight. And many investor, for many times the investor come to tell us and they didn't know Dallas well before. The direct flight brought them here and gave them the chance to explore Dallas. And then they find out Dallas is such a lovely place and with so many good investment opportunities. So they decide to invest here and even move here. How exciting it is, right? So we confident if Mr. William Tao can continue to stay in the DFW International Airport Board, and we believe and he will help to continue to facilitate and explore the partnership opportunities between Asia and here. And we believe those not benefit the Asian community, but also the benefit the Asian community, but also benefit the DFW economy too. So on behalf of the Chinese community, we would like to voice our support and endorsement of Mr. William Tao to be their to be reappointment for the DFW International Airport Board. So hopefully we can you can vote for him. Thank you.
Thank you for coming down,
Mr. Mayor. This concludes your five morning speakers.
Thank you. We'll have an announcement. I think Ms. Arnold wanted to say something.
Yes. Mayor, could I also ask,
could you bring your mic down?
Yes, I'm sorry. Could you consider allowing the latter three members to speak since they are here from the Chamber of Commerce is number one, two, and three, the additional speakers?
From a time standpoint, okay. it's a challenge because we've got to do a few things in 45 minutes.
All right. Well, thank
sorry.
You. Okay, thank you,
but
Mayor.
Thank you for the,
right,
having
I'm
been on, there.
I'm going to come up to the mic where Ms. Rios is, if you don't mind.
Please.
Thanks.
And then Ms. Kelly, you had something too? Okay.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Mayor. Council members and to the public that's watching, we often get, I think we get an opportunity as council members to recognize some of our constituents or to highlight staff and to show our appreciation. And so one acknowledgement, I'm going to wait until I've got to put that last. I want to make sure I took this opportunity to speak on the parade. I want to, and I'm speaking pretty much from District 4, but I would believe that members of the council that I haven't really asked but celebrated would appreciate the fact that Mayor Rollins, you have, you demonstrated the leadership, and we appreciate that with the Martin Luther King Parade. I also want to recognize the hard work of not only Mayor Rollins, but of Mr. A.C. Gonzalez, Mrs. Tiffany Young, Mrs. Vinay Hamilton, Mr. Warren Ernst. Now, I'm calling those people out particularly because you had to take a whole lot of hits, and I mean some serious hits regarding this parade. So I want to make sure you know from District 4, and I'm sure there are others of us who wanted to say thank you for your leadership. We looked like we were the number one city in the nation with that parade, and it's just hats off to you. So I want to make sure we take this opportunity to say thanks, and we want to do that while we're living. So would you all give us an opportunity to appreciate all of those individuals as well as the staff.
Thank you.
I also wanted to make sure we recognized Chief Brown, Chief Bright, and his staff members because they were there. And I mean, Dallas police were definitely there. I stayed until the parade was over. And so I made sure I looked at the cleanups and the whole operation was just clean, so fresh and so clean, as we say. But I also wanted to make sure that all of us who caught a ride with the police and had the escort, we were almost left out of parade. We want to thank them for leading us through the streets of MLK. And it really made us look like we were very important since we had to go up and down to get our cars. So thank thank you so very much for that. The other appreciation I want to show just as a council member to all of the council members who participated in the MLK activities. It meant a great deal to me as a representative from District 4, but also as a citizen of Dallas. It was a very diverse celebration. I appreciated the fact that you came out and celebrated with us, so thank you so very much. And as we move forward into next year, we're going to make it bigger and better. And I want to just throw this in. Mr. A.C. Gonzalez, you had that walk, you had that stride going down Martin Luther King, so we appreciate that so much. The last thing I want to do, I had an opportunity to go to the city secretary's office last Friday, and I realized that they were in the middle of a celebration. And so I wanted to find out a little bit more of what was going on. So they said, well, come on in and eat. No. So I was able to come in and eat some of the favorite chicken of this particular person. And I'm speaking of Rosa Rios, whose favorite is church's chicken. So I was able to eat everything except the cake. So then my mind started working in the middle of the parade. I said, how do I get a cake? Well, then I have to reach out to District 9 because, you know, District 9, Mark Clayton? District 9. Castle Linda Bakery, because we don't have one in District 4, so you know I keep trying to get the business to move there. So I asked my council member to work with me, and he's doing that, Mr. Mark Clayton, to get a cake for Ms. Rosa Rios this morning. So I'm going to ask staff to bring that cake there, and we want to thank you for everything you do for staff. She's been here, I understand, for 9 years, and her work is very much a part of what we do as a city council and also to individual constituents who want to run for office. And so we appreciate your efforts, and I hope that I'll get an opportunity to get some of this cake. But thank you and happy birthday, and thank you so much.
Hey, happy birthday, Rosa.
So, Mayor, with that being said, I do want to say thank you again for all that you do for this city. And people really don't realize what some of us have to go through as we try to represent our constituents. So thank you. And also thank you to the Chinese and the Asian community for being here this morning, as well as the other guests. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Mr. Callahan.
Good morning, everybody. It's my honor and privilege to let you know that over the last few years, the mayor's task force came up with about five or six ideas, and one of which was the earned income tax credit, taking advantage of that. So I'm pleased that the council has and will continue to support the earned income tax credit. And I'm going to read a proclamation that the mayor put together. And we also have Anita Zussman Eddy. She's the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Dallas. And along with her is Jordan Weber. He's the community outreach and legislative affairs manager. If you guys want to join me at the podium, are there others here in support of that? Would you all please come up, and then I'll read this proclamation from the mayor, if I may. And I checked it out to make sure there weren't any real big words in there to give me trouble up here. So, okay, whereas each year the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, joins partners nationwide to launch the Earned Income Tax Credit Awareness Day outreach campaign to ensure that millions of low and moderate income workers get the credit they deserve. And whereas approximately 40,000 low-income Dallas families are eligible for the EITC, but do not claim it on their taxes, and whereas it is estimated that Dallas residents had in recent years accumulated $54 million in unclaimed EITC, and whereas throughout Dallas, IRS-certified volunteer tax preparers are working through Dallas community tax centers in 7 locations to provide free federal tax preparation and filing services. And whereas Dallas Community Tax Centers are a collaboration of several nonprofit and faith-based partners, and whereas volunteers help Dallas citizens file 11,721 free tax returns, claiming $17,024,901 in total tax return dollars, and $7,022,654 in earned income tax credits. Now, therefore, I'm Mayor Mike Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim Friday, January 29th, 2016, as EITC Awareness Day in Dallas, Texas. So, Anita, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Callahan, and I'm going to be pretty brief because I know you have a full agenda. I just want to introduce Malaisie Scruggs and William Schlitz from Christian Madison, who produced the materials to promote the EITC, and Ronnie Daniels, who's the local head of Foundation Communities, which is the vendor that received the $200,000 that this council released to promote the earned income tax credit in Dallas. The Jewish Community Relations Council is part of the Anti-Poverty Coalition of Greater Dallas, which includes the Catholic Diocese, Catholic Charities, United Way, City Square, Texas Hunger Initiative, and Wilshire Baptist Church. And we have taken the lead of this council and this mayor and many people in Dallas to try to help alleviate intergenerational poverty in Dallas. We are all together in trying to achieve this goal so that Dallas is a vibrant, thriving city. And speaking on behalf of the Jewish community, we realize that no community in Dallas, whether it be the Jewish community, the Latino community, the African American community, the Asian community, or any other community, we cannot be strong and healthy as a community unless Dallas is strong and healthy. And we appreciate your leadership and thank you for the support that you have given us in our work.
I really want to thank the Jewish Federation and all the other collaborative partners for being involved in this. These guys put in a yeoman's amount of work. I've seen it firsthand, the work that they do, and we really appreciate that, Anita. If you guys want to get a picture, you know, I'd like to do that and just slide up here. Just come right through here, and then we'll take that. And I wish you guys could see Anita's shoes. I think they're the most beautiful shoes in the room. Could we get the camera down on those shoes? Wow, those are beautiful. Yes, please. Council, please join us.
Where should we stand? Just
straight on through.
Right through your head.
But I appreciate the
Let's look at
all.
Anything special?
Yeah.
Yeah, can we all scoot in a little bit?
Everybody say EITC.
All right, thank you. We will move on to our first agenda item of the day.
Mr. Mayor, I understand you want to go to agenda item number 3. Is that correct?
I think, no, just the DFW stuff?
Yes.
Is one?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do one.
Agenda item number 3 is consideration of appointments to the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board of Directors places 4.
I'm sorry,
6.
Mine was different. Let's go ahead and do the minutes. Let's go ahead and do the minutes and the boards and commissions. I'm sorry. For some reason, mine was worded differently.
Item 1 is approval of minutes of the January 6, 2016 City Council meeting.
We got a motion and a second. Any edits from Ms. Grayson? No? Okay. Good. She reads them. I want those. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have one chair appointment and individual appointments. Daniel C. Perez is being nominated chair to the Judicial Nominating Commission by Mayor Rawlings. Stephen Wynn is being nominated to the Community Development Commission by Councilmember Arnold. Donald R. Parrish Sr. is being nominated to the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board by Mayor Rawlings.
Thomas Jefferson is being nominated to the Civil Service Board of Adjunct Members by Councilmember McGue. Nicole L. Williams is being nominated to the Judicial Nominating Commission by Councilmember McGue. And Joel A. Madden is being nominated to the Landmark Commission by Councilmember Thomas. And Mr. Madden fills the Real Estate Developer Commercial Special Qualification.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve? We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Agenda item number 3 is consideration of appointments to the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board of Directors for places 4, 6, and 9.
Thank you. I will entertain motions from our chairman of the Transportation Committee, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. The Transportation Committee considered appointments to DFW Board for 2 seats. We interviewed 4 candidates, and based on the committee's recommendations, I have 2 motions. For the first seat, I move that we appoint Sam Coates.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
For the second seat, the committee recommended Amir Rupani, and I have a motion to follow the committee's recommendation.
Second. We got a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Well, I have a discussion at this time.
Okay. Excuse me, Ms. Arnold.
Yes. Just a quick question.
Sorry.
As we move for the vote, I just need to make sure at what appropriate time I'm going to vote against this particular motive, but I want to know. I want to put in a nomination, so how does that work?
Right now, just
okay.
Go ahead and
I would like to make submit a nomination for William Tao for this seat on the give me straight on the place, please.
Place.
The place number will be assigned afterwards,
all right,
so it's just
place
for
on the DFW Airport
seat.
Board, Mr. Right. William Tao.
And I second that motion, Mayor.
Thank you. Do you accept that?
I can accept that as a friendly
amendment. We'll accept that as a friendly amendment, and then we'll vote on both of them.
Okay.
Okay. Just he's changing his motion to.
Yeah, I'll change the motion to and we'll look at the
substitute motion.
Yeah, and Ms. Gates. Let's get all the basically.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would also like to make another nomination from the floor. Raj Narani, who's here today with us. Thank you, Raj, for coming down here. And I would like to, he was interviewed in the process and is a great, I think the most, is a really good candidate, most qualified. So I'm going to like to put him on the floor.
Mr. Kleinman?
Yes, I can accept that as well, and I would like to ask us to go ahead and do a ballot vote.
Second.
Okay, we will take all three of those names, take a ballot vote, and determine our decision.
Ballots will be distributed right now. When you're ready, if you'll go ahead and hold your ballot up.
And the other thing, guys, if we do not have a majority, okay, what we will do is take, if someone does not have 8 votes, we will take the top 2 and re-vote, okay? We'll take the top 2 and re-vote.
Please hold your ballot up when you've cast your vote. And Mr. Mayor, we will tally the results and bring them to you once completed.
Okay. Do you need to talk? Do you want to get this started? Okay. All right. Why don't we go ahead and start the introduction to the briefing, and that gives Ms. Rios time to count the vote. Mr. Gonzalez, first item.
Thank you, Mayor. The first briefing that we had, it goes over a lot of work that you as a council, the staff, and the community have been involved in, and that is to make things happen for the betterment of all the citizens of Dallas. The briefing this morning, as we start working towards our budget for next fiscal year, starts off looking at a little bit of what we've accomplished over the last fiscal year and to make note of those things. Mark is going to be giving a more in-depth introduction about the various components, and Latoya will be getting into more detail. I think you'll find that generally speaking, there's a lot of things that got done. There's still more work to be done. As you will see also that we were maybe a little overambitious on some of our goals, and so we're not quite there, but we're trying to keep the ball moving forward. Mark?
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. So this is a multi-year plan running through September 2017. So there are some things that we haven't quite gotten to yet, but I think overall you'll see that we're doing quite well. In the appendix of this briefing are all the items, but what we're going to cover today are basically the highlights, and we'll give you a quick summary of where we stand in as far as all items as well. So this is the annual update as far as where we are. We start this process actually in April, where we kind of have kind of a restart of what's going to be included, and then that's then included in your budget document and for adoption, and then here we are now at the end of the after the end of the fiscal year where we're reporting out on where we are. So this briefing is going to go over our process as well as those accomplishments. At this point, I want to turn it over to Latoya Jackson, who's an assistant director with the Center for Performance Excellence, and she's going to provide some highlights.
Good morning. As a beginning to our presentation, we wanted to give a broad overview of strategic planning. Strategic planning is an active management tool that provides focus for an organization. It's a continuous improvement process that doesn't end with a document called the strategic plan, but it challenges us to anticipate rather than react to the changing conditions. Strategic planning allows us to use our strengths and take advantage of opportunities. Strategic plans can vary in length, anywhere from 3 to 5 years to 100 years. The City of Dallas chose to do a 3-year strategic plan. To create the plan, we began with a focus on our mission, vision, and values. Our mission statement: to enhance the vitality and quality of life for all in the Dallas community is achieved by aligning our goals, objectives, and budget to the council-created key focus areas. Services are budgeted, performance measures are set, and employees work daily to accomplish the strategic objectives that allow us to accomplish the city's mission.
So once again, the next slide is our planning process. We begin with the presentation to the council back in April with an update on any things that need to be tweaked or changed, getting feedback from the council, making sure that that's all in place, and then proceeding to, again, the adoption of the budget. So where we are today is the second step there, where council receives an update, and then also on the third, where we review the work plans and strategies going forward. And then finally, we then present the budget to you in the summer, and that's again adopted. And so the cycle then continues as we update. Next slide.
I have the privilege of presenting some of the accomplishments achieved by the city staff in FY15 to achieve the activities outlined to support our key focus areas. We'll begin with public safety. A review of strategic objectives revealed that the first item cannot be updated at this time because the reporting information will be made available later in the year. However, if we look at strategic objective 1.2, we see that we achieved an 87% arrival time within 5 minutes and 20 seconds. This puts the city on pace to reach the 90% goal by 2017. As we move ahead, we see that another strategic objective is being redesigned for greater impact, the CERT training. The plans are still in place to reach this goal by 2017, ensuring that we'll be able to train at least 3,000 city and community members by then. Court and detention services is also on track to increase collections to $140 by 2017. They were able to collect $123 per resolved citation in fiscal year 2015. These objectives were reached through completion of several work plan items. A few work plan items that I'll highlight now include DPD hosting 7 Chief on the Beat events, including several new locations throughout the city, including Love Field Airport, Dallas Zoo, and the DART rail station. They were also able to grow the Crime Watch groups by 5%, and they were able to teach Blue in the School in 60 schools, impacting over 5,000 students. As we move to economic vibrancy, we see that the data will be available in the summer of 2016 through the administration of our next community survey to address item 2.1. However, as we look at 2.2, we'll see that we were able to maintain street conditions despite having several floods this year. You'll see later that the streets department was able to well exceed the number of potholes filled. And our tax base growth is actually outpacing.
Yeah, we had an update on this one this morning. So we updated our database and included our bordering cities that include Denton, inside Denton County. And we actually outpaced the growth of our bordering suburb cities by 0.2%. So this goal has now been achieved.
And we are quite pleased with our work there. You'll see as we move along that we were also able to add over 3,700 jobs were either added or retained, and over 11,000 residents were added to the city in 2015. These great accomplishments were achieved by implementing bike lane miles, 29.3 miles of on-street bicycle facilities were added. You'll note also that the streets department was able to repair over 37,000 potholes despite the freezes that occurred late in the season, followed almost immediately by the floods. You'll also note that we were able to recruit several major corporations into the downtown area, and we thank you all for adopting the Neighborhood Plus plan at the end of the fiscal year. As we move to clean, healthy environment, you'll see again that much of the data will be made available later this year when the community survey is conducted. But when we look at 3.4, data was available on the Trinity River water quality, which due to the record-setting rains, unfortunately saw an increase in bacteria. However, activities are underway to reverse this trend in coming years in expectation of meeting the goal by 2017. Work plan items accomplished in this key focus area include the environmental presentations. Environmental quality was able to present at over 100 events. They were also able to provide classes on waterway protection to over 2,000 residents. We're also proud to report effective October 26th, the City of Dallas ranked first among local government partners within the Green Power Partnership. We were also able to reduce fuel consumption by over 4% in this fiscal year. As we move ahead to culture, arts, recreation, and education, we'll go to item 4.3, strategic objective 4.3, where we're pleased to report an overall increase in service utilization. Work plan items that we'll highlight in this area include the opening of the GED testing center and the implementation of the Inspired Aging Program, which is now in place in 5 branch libraries. There was also a 13% increase in WRR listenership, and we are pleased to say that the Trust for Public Land reported Fair Park visitors at 5.5 million. This is a major accomplishment, which keeps Fair Park as the number one visited attraction in Texas. As we transition now to eGov, we'll see that we were able to report a 94% increase in social media followers. The city was also able to launch the redesign of its website February 2015.
Thank you. On that point, we'll take the report and the vote, and we'll have some more action.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Narayanan received 2 votes. Mr. Rupani received 7, and Mr. Tao received 6.
Okay.
Therefore, the vote will be between Mr. Rupani and Mr. Tao.
Okay, so let's just do this real quick.
You want a record vote?
What's that? We'll just take a record vote. Okay.
Right.
What's that? We'll just have a record vote. Okay.
We have.
All right.
All right. Okay. Councilmember Griggs.
Just who you voting for?
Mr. Rupani.
We're voting for.
Oh, we do have ballots in case.
You do have ballots?
We do have them now.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Bring them. I'm sorry, I thought you had to print them up or something.
Well, we.
Can we do this in less than 30 minutes this time? Let's do it. We got him? Thank you. We'll continue.
Thank you, Mayor. So the next slide is a summary of where we are on all items. And so you can see if you add up the first 3 there, ahead, completed, or on track, those add up to about 84.2%. And we still have quite a bit of ways to go in terms of this being a multi-year plan through September 2017. So there's a snapshot of kind of where we are. The next several slides are just a listing of some of the awards that are, you know, they're nice to see because they're third-party entities coming in and saying that the city of Dallas is doing quite well in a number of areas. I won't go through all of these because I know that you all have probably read this already, but it's quite impressive when you look at the number of recognitions that we are getting at a national level as well at a state level with regard to our operations. And so let's go ahead and go to the question slide. And with that, Mayor, we'd be glad to take any questions.
Thank you. Let's just keep it on questions right now. Any questions? Okay. Hearing none, we can move to the next item. Okay.
Excuse me.
I do have one question. Okay, let's talk turkey. Mr. McDaniel, tell me again what you said about our roads. Okay. Ms. Jackson.
This fiscal year, the streets department was able to fill over 37,000 potholes.
Yes.
Which allowed the street conditions to remain about on par.
On par with what?
With where it was originally.
Okay.
And Mr. Ware from the streets department.
And where was it originally? I mean, it sounds like we did real good with streets. And to me, when you're doing bad, you can't say we did good.
okay? I mean, seriously. I mean, are we saying we got good streets?
No.
Okay, so we have bad streets, and we kept them bad.
We didn't let them deteriorate further because of the repairs,
to terrible.
Well, plus there was a pretty aggressive program going on with regard to...
We need to be honest with how we do measuring strategic objectives. Keeping us at poor conditions is not a success for me.
It's fair.
Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so let's not pat ourselves on the back there, and let's just say we got a lot of work to do. And I'm not saying this is the streets department or anybody, it's just us.
Yeah.
Saying that, citizens, okay?
Yeah. I just think the point they were trying to make is that it was an extraordinary year with the freezes and so forth.
It was. Yes. I understand. Okay? I mean, please, go ahead.
I think we said it. It was a particularly bad year. We accomplished a lot in terms of actual things. But what you're saying is also correct. We've got a major issue with regards to our street system that needs to be addressed.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
Ms. Grayson.
I'm sneezing.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you. I had a couple of thoughts as I was reading this. One is, with code compliance, I had a question about code compliance, such as, when is a case closed? I've been hearing from folks that a case is closed when it's assigned to an inspector. For our records, for purpose of our records, it's closed when it's assigned to an inspector. It seems to me, now that may not be correct, what I'm saying, but that's what I've been hearing from people who have called in, and they've said, what's the status of this? And they said, the case is closed. It can't be closed if it's not fixed. So my question is, what do we in the city consider a case of code violation to be closed?
Chris Weckard, the code services director, is going to respond to that.
Ms. Grayson, there are several instances when a case is closed in the CSR system and the resident may get a response that the case has been closed. I think the one that we get the most questions about is when we refer it to another agency. So in other words, the service request gets assigned to us, we investigate it, it turns out it's not a code problem, so we have to close that case and reopen another case, for example, for building inspection. So it links to that other service request, but the original service request is closed. So if someone goes online and looks up that service request number, it will show closed, but it will also show it is referred to another agency, so they'll have to sort of follow that chain.
But if it's something that is within your purview, it's not closed until the violation is corrected, like high weeds, like just any of our 900 code things that we have, right?
That is true, but keep in mind sometimes the close can be information provided. So a citizen may think that nothing got done on that property, but if information is provided, then that can be closed. There's a close type for that.
So if somebody calls in a violation and the violator is given 30 days to correct it, will our case show closed to the person who called that in?
No, that should not. That case stays open, and there's a reinspection date set for 30 days out if they're given that much time to come into compliance.
So it's not closed just because the code took the first action.
That's correct.
It's closed when it's fixed.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. I wanted to clarify that. Thank you, Chris. My second question. Sorry, I got one more question. Or one more comment, which is on Trinity Watershed Management. I really think that they need to try harder to improve their oversight of contractors. Seems like we keep having these situations where outside contractors come in and they do something awful, and then later on we go, oh, wow, we need to fix that. So I just think that Trinity Watershed Management needs to improve their oversight of contractors. And I am thinking mainly of what goes on down in the Trinity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. Just a quick follow-up to Mrs. Grayson's question regarding closed. I think we do need to work on that aspect of responding to constituents, because I get that concern. If a constituent calls in, and this is what I've been told,
let's say, for example, I call in to report a code violation regarding someone's high weeds. Now, if my neighbor here, Adam Madrano, also calls in, he's told that it's already been reported and it's going to be closed, something to that effect. So there's some confusion. Because if five of us on the block are concerned about it, they're expecting that all five calls be logged so we'll know just how upset or concerned that neighbor is. So does that ring a bell in terms of how we respond?
Yes, I'm going to ask Margaret, would you come forward and talk about how we log and multiple calls on the same item?
Hi, I'm Margaret Wright with 311. If, and I'm sorry, Ms. Arnold, I was walking in and I didn't hear all of your question, but if we get a duplicate service request, so someone has called in and created a service request for high weeds or whatever the issue is, when a duplicate comes in within a certain proximity or time frame, it's closed as a duplicate, but the so that Chris's staff doesn't go out twice on the same issue. If sufficient time has passed so that maybe there's a reoccurrence of the violation, then it should not be closed as a duplicate and it would go to the department again to service. I hope I've answered your question.
Well, I think what we need to do, and I'll pull on my other hat as president of the Homeowners Association, if I'm telling them to call in the violations and they call in and then they're told, oh, it's going to be closed, it's closed, and they get frustrated. So we need to work on that because as a rule, otherwise I keep getting the calls that our neighborhood is going down. Mm-hmm. So I tell them they need to call. So we need to get that clarification taken care of.
There is a status of closed duplicate that if our agents are not providing that, I'll confirm.
Well, we just need to get a
them.
More healthy, a friendlier communication. Now, the other piece I want to get clear on, do we have a change in policy? And then since I'm new on the block, have we decided on how we're going to address violations? It's a cult. If you come to 837 Marilla and there's high weeds and right next door to it is a junk motor vehicle parked in the front and high weeds, are we passing by that because it wasn't reported? Are we just picking up, because that's what I've been told. If it's not recorded, you're not going to respond to it.
I don't believe so. Chris, can you comment?
Yeah, Ms. Arnold, we actually, part of our work instructions to our inspectors are when they go out to investigate any service request, they are to look around the area that they are in addressing that service request for other violations. And in fact, about 65% of the service requests are proactive. So when we're out there looking, we find 65% of the violations that we're addressing.
All right, so those are some of the serious concerns that we have. So sometimes you may have to spend the rest of the day on the block because you have so many violations and we don't want you, not in Glen Oaks, but just in other neighborhoods around us. I had to throw that in. So that you won't overlook them, and that's what we want to be more assertive about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Take on what Ms. Arnold said about 311. Margaret, I know you and I have had the conversation several times, and I think to your immense credit, anytime I've ever had a question, I think you get back to me in the quickest amount of time of anyone, so I'm very appreciative of that. The biggest thing that I would hope that we would focus on is, I think from a council level, you know, as much as we like to dress up, we're basically glorified customer service people when things go off the rails, and it is a preponderance of the time there's a duplicate claim, the insurance guy in me, a duplicate service request or whatnot. And what the end result is having is the fact that now people won't call 311 anymore. Mm-hmm. They're now calling my staff because they don't have as much faith in the system. So I think any resources that we can give AC to support her department and streamline this, you know, I think would be critical. And especially for the fact that I think you know, you have your idea, what you do, and then you'll have, you know, code will react or sanitation will react. And so I know that's, you guys are the front line. So I definitely appreciate everything that you're doing. But from a metric standpoint, I do have some of the same questions that come up where it'll be like 90% satisfaction rating. I'm like, ain't 90% in my district, you know, and I don't feel like the metrics and how we're judging that is truly reflective of what's really going on. So I'd like to see us come up back with a little bit simpler platform of how we do the measurements. And I would think too, I kind of echo the mayor in what you were saying about kind of talking turkey. I think I know personally, and I try not to talk about my district that much, but look, our streets are at 56%. And if we're going to have a slide that says about economic vibrancy, I don't want to go back to my district and say, hey, the city only cares about you 56%. That's an F on any scale, on any measurement, even at a state school. So I think we need to be very careful, because I think I consistently get frustrated when we do presentations, because it's all about, let us pat ourselves on the back, let us tell you how great we're doing, but we kind of put all the stuff that we're doing bad under the rug. And I think we're all big kids here. Let's have real frank conversations of, here's our strategic plan, here's what we're doing really good, here's what we stink on, here's where we need help. And I would just like us to be, as a council person, if I know that you guys are being transparent and you're doing that, then I make a promise to you that I won't slam you in a public forum for it. You know, I think that's where we have a good partnership. So anyway, thank you very much, Mr. McDaniel, for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Ms. Rios. And then we'll go to the next item.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Rupani received 8 votes, Mr. Tao, 7. And I believe Councilmember Kleinman would like to be recognized.
Mr. Kleinman. Thank you, Mayor. I just also wanted to mention that we are holding over Bernice Washington into her current seat, and that's where the 3 positions are being filled.
Thank you.
The next briefing has to do with the Center of Performance Excellence, which Mark has been heading up in the organization to help address a number of the issues that you've raised this morning, as well as others, in how we can meet those challenges in a more efficient way. So, Mark, if you would start it out.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. I want to introduce Guillermo Garcia to my right. He is the city's black belt. That's not kung fu, but he does have a black belt also, I've learned, in taijutsu. So the guy's skilled in a number of areas. He's done a tremendous job since he's joined us a few months ago and really launching our Lean Six Sigma program in an aggressive way. So he's going to provide an update on that. But we want to cover a number of areas. This briefing was scheduled a few months back, and due to time, we had to reschedule it, so we're very pleased to be back with you today on this item. Next slide, please. So the mission, just a quick review, the mission of the Center for Performance Excellence, as we call it CPE, is to do 2 things. Number one, facilitate best-in-class performance, looking at a systems approach on how we achieve results. And number two, to share those best practices across the region and the state and the nation. And I'll ask Cecilia to just quickly hit the link here, just to point out that we are actually getting quite a bit of national recognition about the efforts that we're putting together, because we're not just doing siloed type of approaches to process improvement. We're actually integrating our process improvement and leveraging one off of the other. Looks like, no? Okay. Let's just go on to the next slide. So why was the CPE created? Bottom line, obviously to provide services to our citizens more efficiently and effectively through disciplined application of proven management systems. And then there's a list here of those management systems. And so the goals would be reducing costs, both current costs and future costs, enhancing responsiveness. So it's not always just about saving money. It's also how can we improve level of service. Also increasing capacity of the existing workforce so that we don't have to add staff as quickly as we might otherwise, because we're doing more with the folks that we have. They're more productive. Motivating the workforce, because an engaged employee is also a productive employee. And so through some of these programs, we're able to engage a lot more people than we ever have. Also improving organizational communications, and this is important. I just saw it last week when we brought a group of folks together that really don't interact ever with each other from different departments, and they share information and they open up new channels of communication in the organization. And then finally, leveraging partnerships by borrowing best practices from other entities. Next slide. So additional expectations, again, that we're going to be a consulting resource for city departments and not a compliance team that goes in and says, are you doing this or not? Being there as a resource again for them. a research and development lab, and with some of these projects, taking some calculated risk in terms of innovation and trying new things, connecting our employees, which I mentioned previously, and then understanding, we talk to our employees a lot about this, that growth and comfort do not coexist. So pushing people out of their comfort zone, really realizing what they can achieve as individuals and employees, and to contribute to the work that they do through through engagement in these tools. And then finally, that this is not an overnight success. It's not a flash in the pan. It's something that's really a marathon, and that you've got to stick with it and to really make that difference. So we want to cover these five items today, starting with Lean Six Sigma is the first performance improvement tool that we are have pretty aggressively deployed. And I'm going to turn it over to Guillermo now to cover those items.
Next slide.
Next slide.
There's a delay.
You can go ahead to the next slide. All right, thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. The City of Dallas began its deployment of the Lean Six Sigma methodology in 2015. To give you a brief historical perspective, Lean Six Sigma comes from...
Lean Six Sigma comes from the private sector. The overall goal is the improvement of processes by eliminating waste and variation. We are not the first government entity to do so. Matter of fact, the first government entity that was able to implement Lean Six Sigma was in the year 2000. As you can see, we're not the first, and we're not the last. The graph that you see before you is a graph of representative sample cities that we've polled that give us an indication of what cities, what organizations have implemented Lean Six Sigma. Every deployment that you see has been a little bit different from each other. For example, Denver's deployment is very similar to ours in that they have invested in training as many individuals as possible throughout the organization. This helps, one, in developing capacity for the continuous improvement program, and it also ensures the integration of Lean Six Sigma throughout the organization. San Antonio and Cincinnati have a different approach in that they have a more project-based deployment. They send out teams from their innovation offices to work on specific type projects. They get very specific. Cities on this list and others that are not on this list have actually contacted us about our deployment to learn about what we're doing and take away some of our best practices as we continue to deploy Lean Six Sigma throughout the organization. We are currently working on 52 projects, of which 28 have been fully defined. This has resulted in us identifying a projected savings of $3.6 million. 90% of that savings will have an impact on the general fund. If we realize all of the hard dollar savings, this will have an equivalent to the annual cost of operating 4 branch libraries and 1 fire station. We will also surpass our initial goals that were set prior to this current fiscal year. This is in part due to the high demand that we have experienced throughout the city. A lot of people have really come to us and asked us, can we be part of this program? Can we learn about Lean Six Sigma? And to be honest, this demand has exceeded our expectations. The chart you see now illustrates the potential impact that Lean Six Sigma can have on the organization. These projected savings are based on first year savings of closed projects. By increasing the cadre of Lean Six Sigma, we would could potentially be looking at saving the city $16 million per year by year 5. We are laying that foundation today to achieve these goals. We have trained 184 blue belts, which receive an introductory class to Lean Six Sigma. Because of the demand, we have also created a yellow belt training. They are responsible for helping us to identify potential projects, and we have trained 51 individuals. We also have trained 52 green belts to date, and we will have an additional 50 by the end of this fiscal year. Green belts are tasked with completing projects within their work areas. We also have 2 black belts that help mentor and complete projects. There are many ways that we identify projects. One way is the sunset review process. I and the black belts are participants in this year's review process. We are tasked with helping to identify as many potential opportunities for improvement. The other methods like business planning, budget reviews, and others also are used to help us to identify opportunities for improvement throughout the organization. The next two slides that you'll see are examples of the various projects that we are working on. For example, one of the projects I'll quickly talk about is a project that was identified through the Sunset Review process, and that's improve the NORP registration process. This project has a potential savings of $108,000. Another project that we have is improve the water move-in process, and this has a potential of saving approximately $128,000. Another Sunset identified project is the improve the court assignment project, and this has a potential savings of roughly about $450,000. And then, of course, improve the pothole cost variance has a potential savings of $54,000. These are just a few examples, but each of these projects are very important to us because they help us to achieve the highest levels of performance for the organizations. We would like to invite you to join us on January 28th as we hold our second project report out. We will present various projects in different states of completion. We're also very appreciative for council members who have joined us in the past.
We'll now transition to performance measurement, benchmarking, and surveying. I'll begin by highlighting the improvements in data visualization. The city used PerformanceSoft to track and display performance data by department. However, the system was difficult to navigate and visually unappealing, as these graphics clearly show. In response to that, we created the new Dallas Data Point system. It has improved display, is easier to navigate, is interactive, and allows the addition of narratives to support measure information. Our new system has received over 35,000 visitors since we launched in October. Now, we'd like to quickly show you some of the system's features. We think. This is our landing page. The landing page allows you to see all five of the key focus areas. You also have an additional links place, which allows us to see other open data type services that are available. If, as we scroll down, you'll see a welcome message from our city manager, AC Gonzalez. And we also have the opportunity for residents or anyone from the community to submit information through the feedback loop. And we have the ability to, of course, respond to any requests that we receive for additional information. Primarily, we receive requests from graduate students who are working in on receiving their MPA degrees, and they're interested in reviewing the data and receiving additional information there. As we scroll back up, you'll see the group tiles, which show us each key focus area. The tiles may have a separate status. It includes the measures, it includes a deeper dive of other measures, and allows you to see narratives again. Just to quickly take you into some of the tiles, we'll like to look at economic vibrancy. And as we click and look at economic vibrancy, we wanted to provide some general information to the public. It includes information on the various departments that are represented through economic vibrancy. And then we have high-level tiles. For your viewing pleasure, we'd like to drill down on water now. You'll see not only that there's an overarching measure, which is the cost per million gallons of water treated, but you'll also see that as we scroll down through this tool, we have the opportunity to share general information and knowledge with the public about water, water safety, water conservation. We've been able to include photos. The system allows us to include maps, which highlights not only what we currently have in water planning, but future water plan. And perhaps one of the educational pieces that youth use is the water treatment process information. In addition, you have the ability to actually review data in some of its various formats. You'll see the number of test samples. And as we drill down to explore the data, this system is, of course, interactive. And so you have the ability to look at the data in its original state, but let's say you like to visualize things through a different system. As the user, you can click on
some of the tiles to the side to change the visualization options and how the data is presented for you. This system also allows you to export the data so that it can be used in PowerPoint or in other Microsoft Office systems. We just wanted to give you a quick view of how the system can be used. To quickly show you another option or some additional information, we'd like to drill down into clean, healthy environment, another one of our key focus areas. Again, you see the departments listed, and it gives you an opportunity to see some of our high-level items. We wanted to take an opportunity to drill down on animals. So you'll see the high-level tile, which shows the live release rate. You also see the introduction of several photos. And we'll pause here to look at the data. Again, you have the opportunity to explore the data, to visualize data, to customize your colors, and through this system, if you modify the visual, you can also save this data so that it's there for you the next time you return to the system. And you'll see she's making some of the changes now. Forgive the fact that there's a little bit of a delay, but you'll see the capabilities of the system. We wanted to share that with you because this system allows us to display our performance data here. We also have the ability to display our data against other cities. As we return to the presentation, we display our data not only through the visualization, but also through benchmarking. Overall, benchmarking allows the city to review ourselves and compare ourselves to other jurisdictions. One tool that's used is ICMA Insights. Some of the areas for comparison appear on the screen now. You'll see that we can look at neighborhood services and compare ourselves across the nation, public safety, social services, etc. The city benchmarks against other jurisdictions with populations over 500,000. ICMA performance data has been integrated into Dallas Data Points and can be used for comparison data in department business plans. In addition, we use surveys to gather citizen input. We've used both citizen and business surveys. Community surveys are conducted biannually, and the next survey will occur later this year. At the end of 2015, we conducted a business survey. Those results will be presented to you at next month. All surveys contain statistically valid samples of at least 100 surveys in each council district and have a confidence level of 95%. As we look at internal surveys, our team conducts these internal surveys to gauge internal customer satisfaction. Surveys have been conducted for departments throughout the city upon request. We're having a few technical difficulties. If you'll bear with us 1 second, but when we return, Mark will continue.
They've got the slides, I'll just keep going. So the next thing I want to talk a little bit about is business planning. This is something else that we've started here in the last year. And what business planning does for us, go ahead and go on to the next slide.
They're trying to get it to connect.
Okay, there you go, great. Next slide. So what business planning does for us is it standardizes the way that we do business in terms of reporting citywide. And so every department has a similar template around the city's goals, which include metrics, and also look at the 7 Baldrige criteria. In terms of the Baldrige framework, this is also another tool that was really born out of private industry and now is beginning to be proliferated in government. And so it's got a long history here and some very strong credentials, including association with the American Society of Quality. The other thing that I want to point out, too, is on slide 26, is accountability through scoring. So we just completed the fourth quarter business plans. There's review teams that are scoring those plans, and every business plan will be scored on a scale of 0 to 1,000. And so we look at the criteria on the screen here. Obviously, results is the big one with 450 points, weighted very heavily in that area. But we also look at leadership and customer focus and so forth. And so, again, every single department business plan is being rated on these. And we're going to do that twice a year. And then in the off quarters, we're basically coaching around where we need to improve as a department or perhaps as an organization. On slide 27, there's a cycle here that points out the process I just mentioned where the department submits its business plan October. They review team scores in January, which is where we are now. We provide those some coaching in January through March around where we think we have some gaps. And then they submit revised business plans in April. And then we review again, and then we provide coaching. So it's this constant cycle. In my experience in doing this in other organizations, it takes a while to get that score up. And so we're trying to be, just coach rather than compliance, right? So in terms of the departments and their needs, and every department's at a different place, and every department starts at a different place. If you're a brand new director and you're hired into a department that needs to be overhauled and you're the best director, you may end up with a pretty low score to begin with. So it's not really about the score, it's about are you making progress each quarter? And so that's what we'll be focused on as the Center for Performance Excellence, as well as with the department heads, coaching them around how do we improve in particular areas. And then the next slide just gets into the teams. We do have 27 individuals on five teams that have been trained in the Baldrige criteria. These are people at varying levels in the organization, and so they've had pretty significant training so that they can prepare for doing the business plan scoring. Next, we want to talk a little bit about QMS, or Quality Management Systems, ISO 9001.
The city is engaged in three management systems: EMS or environmental, QMS for quality, and OSAS for safety. Our journey began in 2005 with EMS, where we now have 11 departments fully certified. In 2006, we started the quality journey, and there are 9 full departments and 3 partial departments certified. And then we began in 2007 the safety. At this time, we have 7 departments fully certified. The value of ISO includes improved consistency of service and product performance, as well as improved productivity and efficiency, among many others. For the 10-year anniversary of QMS, or quality, we're re-engineering our deployment strategy. One major change saved close to $30,000 for this fiscal year, and an estimated $240,000 will be saved over the next 4 years through a contract renegotiation. Other changes include decentralization of staff and enhanced reporting at the department level. As a city, we're also engaged in training opportunities. We're working in conjunction with City University, and we have launched Big Academy. We launched it at the beginning of this fiscal year. The class offerings include critical thinking, customer service training, Lean Six Sigma training, and the newly launched Emerging Leader Program. To date, this fiscal year, we have trained over 2,400 employees. Additionally, CPE co-hosted its first regional innovation forum with the Alliance for Innovation in October. The event brought together leaders from across the city of Dallas, the DFW region, and the state of Texas to study 44 trends that could impact how local governments operate in the next generation. This partnership will be further enhanced, as Mark will describe.
So one of the things that we're putting together as the City of Dallas is a national consortium on Lean Six Sigma and best practices. What I found is that people are teaching it, but they're not teaching how to strategically deploy it from an organizational development standpoint. And so many of my colleagues around the nation, managers, assistant city managers that are doing this really want to develop a network. And so we can share best practices and what's been successful and not successful. How do you identify projects and so forth? And so the alliance is going to be the kind of the secretariat to help make that happen. On the next slide, we get into monitoring our progress. And so the first slide is really just a listing of milestones. So you can see since October 2014, been very busy with a lot of different initiatives. I want to thank the organization, particularly the department directors, for really embracing this as part of our working group and pushing for a lot of initiative and really using these tools in a way that we've never used improvement tools before. I also want to thank council members that have given us some constructive criticism and coaching from a policy perspective. As a result of your input, for example, we added a yellow belted program so that we could have employee suggestions come to us more rapidly from a broader base of the organization and just a number of different initiatives in terms of comparison to other cities and benchmarking against other cities. And really, I think trying to tweak this and I call it Dallasize what we're doing. So, you know, we're unlike any other organization. What works here maybe doesn't work somewhere else. And so your suggestions and ideas have been very, very helpful. On the next slide is just what's next. I just want to point out a few things that we're planning and would appreciate any feedback at the conclusion of the presentation if you all have other ideas. So the second item there is we're going to complete our business plan scoring in January. We'll be meeting with department heads individually and talking to them about their score and talking to them about how we might be able to help them going forward. We have an advisory board meeting that's going to be our first advisory board meeting, the third bullet there in January as well. We've got people from academia, the private sector, and nonprofits that'll be helping to give some advice to us as well on how we deploy. Also, we're suggesting that the middle bullet there, brief CPE quarterly memo to BF&A committee every quarter, so that is constantly in front of the council and you can ask questions about where we are on different data points. And just things like the community survey, which we do every other year. And then finally, every year coming back to you on how we achieved results each year. So coming back to the full body of the council on an annual basis. And then finally, the last slide here is just an overview of some of the tools that we'll be using, the metrics and the dashboards. We have those available now. If anybody wants to get a hard copy of some of the, for example, the Lean Six Sigma dashboard, where we track all of our metrics related to Lean Six Sigma. The report outs, as I've mentioned, the business planning, the scoring, and then the surveying. So with that, Mayor Pro Tem, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
If I might start, first of all, our apologies for the technical aspects of this. We're keeping with the mayor's admonition to see about just telling what's not going great. That was horrible in terms of some of the stuff that fell apart. And what's very unfortunate about that is that it took away from a presentation which was really designed to tell you about a lot of good work that's been going on throughout the organization over the last several months that are really making an impact in so many different ways. We are seeing in the variety of ways more of our employees being energized and getting involved with this effort. There's a lot of new faces that are coming to the meetings to find out more about how they can become more effective in their respective jobs. They're being encouraged. We have an organization with our employees that have advisory committees that select among themselves representatives, and those individuals are taking advantage of some of the training that Mark was talking about. One of the other impacts, and I dare ask if we can get to slide 10. I'm almost a little afraid to even ask that, but there we go. Okay. The This particular slide that is to try to show you about the savings which they are documenting for in the operation as we go forward. It says up there it's first year savings, and the significance of that is rather profound in that when we're making changes in the organization to do things that can be documented are more efficiently done and have a soft and hard savings, that's on that first year as shown. The reality is that if that keeps going, I mean, that would keep going as an ongoing savings into the organization. So this indication of savings in an operation is actually multiple, builds on itself and is cumulative. And it's, we didn't show that because it just becomes a fairly wild number. But it's those efforts that really help provide a mechanism for us to be able to do other things in the organization to serve our public or to address inflationary type costs. And so this is truly significant.
Is that it? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. City Manager, and all of you, thank you for this presentation. I will say that I think it's important for us to continue to support staff so that they can feel comfortable not only to come to work and help us to help our constituency, but also to feel comfortable in their workplace. So I believe that that is very, very important for them to do their work that will be helping our constituency in here in the city of Dallas. And I think that that also shows that the information that you presented, and that is how many people are coming to Dallas and also people spending the money in Dallas. So that's important for us to continue to serve all of them. So with that, I am going to ask Mr. Thomas first.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. Very good information. I have a couple of questions, though. Number one, you can go to page 13. And you talked about sunset review. What actually takes place during sunset review, and what factors do you take into consideration? Then I have a couple more questions.
LaToya or Guillermo, you all are directly involved in that. I will say that with our business planning, that's also a form of sunset review, and every department is doing that because the same information that we're asking for with the business planning is a lot of the same information that they're reviewing in their sunset review. Is they're just doing a little bit deeper dive in terms of kind of a critical review of everything and assuming nothing in terms of the operations. Sunset review is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not necessarily that we're going to completely eliminate a department, but we, you know, just like at the state level, I don't know that that ever happens, but we do actually go in and look at, are we doing things in the best way? Are we staying with our core mission as a department? Are there things that we maybe could be done better elsewhere? Just a full gamut of review, and y'all want to comment on your experience?
One of the things is that it allows us to really take a deep dive into the organization, look at the financials, look at the various operations that they're doing, that allows us to then look at and say, okay, is this something that we want to try to improve upon? Mm-hmm. And so we're actually working through that process right now of identifying potential questions that could lead potential opportunities for us to work on.
And Jack, could you comment on that as well, as just sunset review in general and what's included?
I believe you've covered it pretty well. It is an opportunity for us to take a deep dive into the various departments, looking at the expenditures, the revenues, the performance, is there duplication of services, and just trying to find opportunities to cut costs and improve services.
Are recommendations made after the review to actually eliminate departments?
We haven't seen that to date. When we reported out on the first go around, I think there was something in the order of 60 or 70 recommendations. And so we are pursuing a number of those through Lean Six Sigma projects. Some of those were kind of low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and then we went ahead and took advantage of them immediately in terms of the suggestions and the savings that resulted from that. And then some are still in what we call our Project Hopper for future Lean Six Sigma projects as we develop more green belts to take on those projects. projects. But in terms of actual elimination of an entire department, I just don't, that's not happened yet, and I don't think that's what we're really looking for. We're looking for, could we do something in a better way? Maybe another department could do it better, another agency that's not even the city do it better, and our partnerships with our other government entities and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And my next question is, I was at the National League of Cities, and one of the classes I was in was on data-driven leadership. And we had one of our officers here who was actually presenting at that workshop, and he presented regarding open data and specifically about the police shootings and how Dallas is an example of transparency with this information. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Because oftentimes, you know, I talk, so my colleagues, we talk about needing this data as we're going out, and especially on the, as far as economic development, when we're going out and talking about constituents who want, you know, better services, specifically in Southern Dallas. So can you talk about that? I know Bill Finch has been working on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So early on, Bill has put on some products out there as kind of soft opening types of initiatives. The Dallas Data Points actually had a soft opening to kind of make sure that we worked the bugs out. And as you saw, we had like 45,000 or 35,000 visitors. I'll tell you, this month we did another soft launch that we'll be hearing more about, and that's around financial transparency as a tool to drill down on budget data and audit data and so forth. And that's another initiative that Bill and his shop are working on. What we're trying to do is create a portal on our website where you can, and that's where that tile that showed additional links, that's what that was about, to go to that the other data, whether it's you want to mine the data as far as just raw data, as far as calls for different types of complaints, whether it's code or police or what have you, or if you want to actually drill down on the data that LaToya reviewed with you, and then the financial transparency data. So we're really moving pretty quickly in that direction, and I think you can expect a briefing on the financial data within the next few months.
Well, I appreciate it. I see Bill is here. If he could come and give us some insight in terms of what his work has been and kind of where he looks to go with that.
I'm assuming you're referring to the open data portal.
Correct.
We've got almost 100 data sets now on our open data portal, which is we also track ourselves against in the United States, there's a census track that actually looks at cities and where they stand. We're at about number 30 out of 100 right now. We were about a year ago almost about 60. So we're quickly trying to move up that list, and of course our goal would be to at least be in the top 10 in terms of our transparency with data and so forth. And as Mark was sharing with you, we just opened this week the budget and the vendor payment portals, which are open data. We've actually had the financial data out there for a couple of years. What we've done, but it's been mostly in what we call rows and columns. It's just raw data. So it's like looking at something on an Excel spreadsheet.
Right.
What we've done now is we've converted that to an app that lets people look at it graphically. It's more visually appealing to folks, and you can drill down into things or look at specific vendors like an AT&T or a Deloitte or a Black & Veatch, whoever we're paying fees and services to, you can actually look those up and see in its entirety what we're spending in the city with by specific vendor or department. So is that
Definitely. One last question in for you. In terms of, it's good to have, we want to be transparent and have transparency, but if we have this information, the general public is not aware of it, then, it kind of defeats the purpose. So how are we getting this information out, letting, general public know? How do we plan? I know it says somebody being beta tested. How do we plan to utilize PIO to get this information out to where a general, population can see it?
The PIO has been helpful in the sense that they put out news announcements. We put it on Dallas City News. We'll also add it, for example, on the front page of DallasCityHall.com as sort of a feature app for, you know, a few weeks, and then that comes off and something else is added onto that. But we're trying to use those means at this point to kind of get the message and the word out that, this is here. For the open data portal, we had several announcements that went out on that 2 years ago when that launched.
Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks, Mark.
And also comment, we can get some of the specific numbers to you, but it's with the introduction of some of these, like the website, some of the other web landing pages that are offering more data, the visitors, the number of visitors that we're getting is rather incredible. And so, you know, the people that are generally looking for things like that are finding us. We're also, as Bill just mentioned, getting the word out. But at the end of the day, we're getting some rather impressive numbers of people visiting those web pages.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mark, Guillermo, LaTanya, thank you for the presentation. I'm extremely excited about what you presented. Having worked in an environment like this before, I recognize the potential for the possibilities. And I just want to start off by saying that 94% of problems in business are systems, system-driven, and only 6% are people-driven. 94% of problems in business are systems-driven, and 6% are people-driven. And that was a quote by Mr. Deming, who, if you don't know, was what they call him, the godfather of quality control, individual who helped foreign automakers be successful, such as Toyota, and be able to have the type of products that for a while were outpacing the U.S. until we decided that, you know what, we needed that service. So, and what it says is that it's the process and not the people. It's the management. And if you look at how it's set up, management dictates process, not employees. And one of the things is this is a process that's not going to be a overnight success. If you would turn to slide six, you may have heard me talk about this before, plan, do, check, act. And on the previous page, it lists the different areas or programs that we are embarked upon. This is truly behind the scenes. This is internal processes. What it does is, looking at it from what we plan to do, how do we plan it, and that goes into what are our matrix for those that are my colleagues who are very conservative or want data or want output. This is for you, matrix. You should get really excited about this because it deals with matrix. Once you planned on what you're going to do, then you do it. After you've done it, you check to make sure that you're meeting what you had planned to do in the beginning. And if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you keep doing it. But if you're not meeting your matrix, or if you're exceeding your matrix, then there may be some adjustments that may need to be input into your plan. So just kind of give you an idea of what this entails. And for an employee standpoint, it's exciting because what it does is it gives the employee an opportunity to have a voice in the process and be able to provide input for changes, necessary changes. Oftentimes, we know the wheels of just of government is slow, but this allows them to be able to have input in the process. I've spoken to a class and just kind of let them know that, you know, management is important, employees are important, and it has to have full buy-in. One of the questions was, what will come out of this is the fear that people won't support it. And if they don't support it, then it's not going to work very well. So this is, I believe, a commitment from top down. But more importantly, this is a process that's really designed from bottom up. It's not a top down process. It's a bottom up. So it's designed for for the top person down to the newest employee to be able to have valued input. And it also allows the opportunity for employees to have their assets utilized. In other words, what they're really good at. Someone who, let's say, is in water may be a better individual in procurement. It allows you to be able to have an opportunity to be able to have your skills utilized to your maximum potential, which makes a more efficient, happy employee, which makes us more efficient and a better worker. So we begin to have less absenteeism, less transfers, but it makes the employee valuable because it begins a process of cross-training for employees so that we no longer have, like, in maybe in permits or some office that we've often heard where an individual goes on vacation, and once that person goes on vacation, it sits on their desk until they come back. This process is one of those processes that will eliminate that by cross-training individuals so that they are more valuable within a department, thus making a department more efficient because we have matrix in terms of goals and things that we're trying to set. So it's a great process. It's a slow process. I know we talked about, AC talked about the potential savings, but oftentimes those savings exceed what's being projected because once it's like a snowball. Once it starts going, people start seeing the savings and the benefit of it. Everyone gets a hold of it, and you have all these different opportunities to save. And again, going back to my colleagues who are more conservative that want to find money within our budget, this is a great process because this would allow us to be able to cut those inefficiencies in the departments where we figure a waste are. I have to admit that I'm probably sure that we're not as efficient as we could be, but this will allow us to get to that point. And it's going to be a slow process. That ideally, the first couple of years are going to be a pain as we go through this, as we change the way that we speak, as we change the way we think about things. But the real fruit comes in about year three or four if it's implemented correctly and with the intent of seeing it through and not being discouraged in year one. While the savings may be small at the beginning, but in the end, they will begin to multiply themselves in how we're more efficient, how we're more transparent, and how we're able to produce and provide the type of service with oftentimes less equipment or less individuals to be able to do what we've been doing before. So I want to just encourage you to take your time to, in your quiet time, read through the information. I know it's a lot of jargon. If you're not a business major, it's not necessarily your cup of tea, but having been in an environment where this was implemented and seeing the savings, where it created an environment to where that we went from a large organization to a smaller, more efficient organization, able to meet the necessary changes and diverse changes that happened in the department, because I was in a department that changed constantly, which I think we're in. It allows us to be able to better predict trends and react to them prior to them coming, whether they're seasonal, fiscal, we're able to see those occurrences in advance and be able to react more efficiently to those situations, and we're not back on our heels as much. So this allows us to not be in so much as a firefighter mode, but as a more preemptive mode. So I want to thank you for taking on this task and bringing this to us. I invite everyone to take whole heart and provide feedback. The biggest thing you can do is to provide feedback and then implement that feedback. So without you providing feedback and implementing that feedback, it won't work. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Magoo.
Thank you. Appreciate the presentation. I had a question. When we were going through, we talked about the non-owner occupied rental registration, and you talked about the improvement and the savings. Can you go back to that and tell me where those savings are coming from?
The savings are more revenue generating because right now the process is not capturing re-registers. And so right now what they're doing is working to revise the ordinance itself and trying to get it to where it continually generates revenue, especially with those that are coming back through that system, because right now it's just the first time register that you get in regards to revenue, and so it doesn't capture the renewals.
There's a fee with that registration?
I believe there is. I'm not aware what that fee is. I would have to consult with the Greenbelt on that one.
It's a $25 registration fee. It is waived if they continually update it. What's the revenue enhancement that he's speaking of is those people who have let it lapse need to reapply as if their first time, so it would be the additional amount. Now, all of that is subject to change with the proposed amendments mm-hmm. we have to Chapter 27 that's before the Housing Committee right now that we're going to continue to work on.
Right, and that's what I was asking. I was trying to figure that part of it out. And that number, can you tell me what that number was again of savings? Or revenue?
Approximately $108,000.
Mm-hmm. And that would be based on actually going back to the people that have already registered and getting them to re-register and pay the $25 fee?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. If they'd let it lapse.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mark, I was very cautiously optimistic about this presentation. You know, one of the things when I first got here, you know, I definitely put the poo-poo on your program, but, you know, one of the things I felt like you were real sincere about, yes, I said that word. one of the things I thought you were very sincere about was, you know, the fact that I think you see this as something that can really, you know, find the coins in the couch cushions. The one thing that I would just continuously encourage you to do, and this, AC, you and I have had this conversation, is a lot of this stuff that we do, I think, rings hollow somewhat to me, because I don't believe as an organization we treat ourselves as a business, because we don't have a profit motive, because we can raise taxes to achieve the goals that we want to achieve by and large. Now, you know, obviously you can't raise it so much that we can fix our streets overnight, but by and large, we can raise taxes to do this. And so one of the things that moving forward, where you'll see me fall off the optimism wagon, is if we don't start taking some of what the basic tenets of Six Sigma is. You know, say what you will, and I'm just not a big fan of Jack Welch, but Jack Welch fired 10% of his staff every year. Whoever the bottom performers were, he cut them. Here, you know, you don't get fired ever. Ever, ever, ever. Unless you do something so egregious that you almost go to jail. If we're going to take a sincere look at really making this thing a functional tool, we've got to look at treating this more like a business. You know, it's interesting. I had thought about the same slide. I can see the trend lines projecting upwards. You know, I know when we talked at budget time about the sunsetting versus what this cost, it was basically a wash. But I think it's worth giving a try, because if you make a dollar, still more a dollar more than we had. But how did you get, again, forgive me, I'm not so sure I buy your math on how you're going to go like this. Explain to me briefly how you guys got to that number again of $16 million.
So what it assumes is that we're going to be sending 50 new individuals through each year, and that the 50 that we trained in the prior year and the year before that, for example, are still doing projects. So you're building the number of projects every year. That's really how you get there. We're assuming here in this graph an average of savings of $84,318, which is kind of what we're seeing so far in the first 28 projects. And then looking at, again, I think a completion rate of, what, 75%? So not all projects would be completed. And sometimes people don't stay in the program, and so you have to discount from 100%. So you're growing, the number of green belts is really the thing that is helping you get your growth going.
Okay, so forgive me, without having to go back through slides. So year one, fiscal year 15-16, so how much in the hard costs are we going to save? So when we come back to budget time, how much do you project in your best guesstimate that we will save in hard costs this year?
Right now, we've already identified hard costs of $2.5 million, but that's just with 28 projects.
Okay, that's fine. So here's what my ask would be, AC. If we save $2.5 million, then we need to be able to come into budget time, and we need to have a very specific line item that says, hey, we did this program, here's $2.5 million. That needs to be counseled, because the thing that I worry about is, okay, and I'm not knocking the program, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. If you save $2.5 million or $16 million over 5 years or whatever the number is, how do we see that in the budget? Because if you are talking about sanitation, use random example, and you guys figure out a program, or I'm sorry, a savings which is awesome. It's exactly what you should be doing, and you save $200,000 in sanitation because, and then you have soft costs because employees, you know, aren't having to be do redundant tasks, whatever the example is. Do you really save that, or do those get reapplied towards other efforts and you didn't really save anything at all? Because I know one of the things just in the last 2 days, I've gotten briefed on at least two presentations that I can think of, which I don't ever remember even talking about. And it was people going out and saying, well, now that we have more time, therefore we're going to go do our project. And so I want to make sure that we have a metric behind, you know, figuring out here's savings, here's real thing at a council level that we can see hard cost savings. Because I know as a small business guy, I look at the numbers every day and I apply it to the gospel of Mark, which is, you know, I got to have more revenue than I have expenses. And I really want to be supportive of this. I've been very appreciative of your candor towards me about what you're looking to accomplish. But I think we just have to make sure, you know, that we're doing that. The other thing that I just want to make sure that we're being careful about as I click through, you know, prior to the briefing, our new data points is, again, I think we all have a habit of this, and myself included, where we position. You know, we put the best spin on the on our product. When we're talking about streets, you know, not to belabor the point, but we have really bad streets, right? But when we go into data points, it doesn't accurately reflect that. It wows you in data. But I think we need to have a little bit more realization that one of the reasons that our clients are coming to us and saying a demand for transparency, whether financial that you mentioned or the data points on sanitation or streets or otherwise, is a perceptual feeling, right or wrong, that the product that we are offering is not as good as what we are projecting. And so as an organization and as a nonprofit business, we need to be, and I would hope that the Center for Performance Excellence really takes a lead on this, is to say very truthfully and candidly, here are our strengths, here are our weaknesses, here's what we are aiming for, here's what we're going to fall by the wayside on. And then as the projects that you guys coordinate, not only do they look to do the hard and soft savings of efficiencies in government, but also taking the lead role in the public relations aspect of public accountability. So as we go forward in this, I think that would be my rallying cry to you to make sure that we do, because I think that to your credit, and I think AC to your credit, I think you guys understand that what we have done in the past has not always been good enough, and that we're aspiring to move into 2016 with 2016 tools, not 1916 tools. So thank you for that, and I definitely appreciate all your work on it.
Thank you.
If I might comment, we will have to have a conversation about the how we translate the hard savings into the budget, because in some cases, when you look at hard savings, there are in some cases ways that could be, if you will, be set aside and said, this is savings that we could be using for budget. An example of that might be we have a projection of fuel use, and because we're doing something more efficiently, we will reduce our budgets for that fuel cost, and we will allocate it to something new. In other cases, we might identify some hard cost savings within a department. Since we were talking about code as an example, where the true process savings, or in this case revenue, was an amount of dollars that were there, but the amount of work that's going on in the department is such where they're just behind all the time, and so that doesn't necessarily translate into a new opportunity per se, but it would help us be more efficient and be able to get more things done in that code department. So we may be needing to make sure we're clear about what are the things that are coming out that are reallocable and what are just more things being done within a department.
Yeah, I hear you. I would just caution. I think this is a tool that allows you to build a bridge with council. I can only speak for me. I can't speak for anybody else. But one of my concerns, I know my first experience coming into council was I couldn't really get good data on the budget until it was released to the press. When I was trying to drill down and find what job items were, it wasn't there. And so my first impression, and I'm just being candid, my first impression was the budget's 99.5% cooked before I ever have any input. And then we allocate a few bucks here and there, and it's like the Hunger Games. We're all getting in the middle of the cornucopia to see what we can scrap out. So I think this is a bridge where if you want us to support things that are anything different than what the basics are, streets, sanitation, code, you know, animals, then I think the more you can bring it to us in a way that allows us to have the decision-making, or not decision-making, but to see the fruits of our decision-making, I think the better off it would be. So that's sure. Where we can talk more offline okay. about that, but that was my point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. And I think with that, I want to thank...
I'm sorry.
I didn't see you. I'm sorry, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. These two gentlemen gave me food for thought. When a department identifies savings, and it's a possibility that it's a general fund savings and that we can use it elsewhere, is it a disincentive for that department to save money? Because every department seems to have a wish list of things that they think they could use that would help them do their job better. We see that in the budget when things fall below the lines, for instance. So if we're saying that we're asking departments to be leaner and all of that, leaner, meaner, and all of that, are we creating a disincentive if we take the savings away from them and apply it somewhere else?
To some extent, yes, but that has been the life that I guess cities, certainly this city, has had for a good long while. The dynamic that goes on is much like when we see in all the early budget presentations, is that we start out our the prospects of being in a deficit. And why? Because generally speaking, we can identify, project our expenses much more accurately and confidently than we can our revenues. And so being a little conservative, we stay on that posture. But it presents a picture of us being in a deficit. So we start immediately talking with all the departments about how can we change this picture so that we reduce expenses to address that deficit. Now, you're right, in the dynamic of a department going out there and they see savings, it's often a dynamic we go, well, that's great, take it, and we're going to use it for making, you know, everything work. Now, there is an overall benefit, if you will, in that a lot of the inflationary expenses or the trending on expenses in large part have to do with the maintenance of salaries. I mean, because most of the budgets are salaries. So to the extent that any department can be helpful in all of the departments being able to just maintain the individuals that they have and keep up with inflation on their salaries so that they don't lose them, therein lies, I believe, the incentive that we keep pushing forward on how we can improve the efficiencies of a process or eliminate some of the positions so that they would make available for those that are still around. So it's not totally a turnoff for the department, because they do get an overall benefit. But by and large, we're from the very beginning, we're looking for savings just to meet the
projections. I'm thinking of an example from a budget a couple of years ago where the park department saved $300,000 plus, and we took that and did our end of the budget divvying up and chopped it all up and gave a few thousand here and a few thousand there, and I thought, what's the incentive for the park department, who had a wish list of other things that they wanted to fund? What would be their future incentive to create a savings that we then took and chopped it all up and gave it to somebody else? So, you know, I just was thinking about that as we hear these briefings where we're trying to do things differently in this city. And so I was just wondering, how different is it really in the end if we save money and we do the same thing we've always done?
Well, we have on occasion identified a particular program and said to the department, if you can make, you know, you're going to bet on the come, if you will. We're going to put some resources here for you to do a project, and then you're supposed to increase your revenues or reduce. And we just set their budget, making an assumption that they have to work to go make real. We've done that on occasion, and the departments have responded accordingly and have been successful in most of the occasions, not all. But that has also been part of the process. I don't know that you could characterize the budget process as any one thing. It's numerous things and numerous strategies that we go about trying to encourage everybody to work with less.
Well, thank you for that response. I mean, I read all of these briefings today. It was a little like inside baseball. I mean, if you don't have a degree in business management, it's like, whoa. But the discussion did help me.
And at the end of the day, this is about delivering service to our citizens.
Thank you.
The other thing I would say about incentives is that if a department does well in its performance in hard and soft savings, they're also doing a business plan. They're identifying what their budget needs are for this year and beyond in terms of their overall strategies and goals. And so when they submit their budget requests, those departments that perform very well in terms of gaining efficiencies are tend to be, in my past experience, tend to be the ones that also get new resources to do new things that are a priority for the council and others. So it's rewarding those that are performing well by they're able to get more of their plans and their strategies accomplished.
So that's a positive reinforcement. That's an incentive versus a disincentive. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you again for your presentation. And we will go on to our next one. And colleagues, it's doing a closed session, but I wanted to bring out the speakers now so that we can be able to do the speaker section now, and then we'll go into the closed session. So I'll let our secretary mention that.
Thank you. The following are the remaining open microphone speakers. Ting Wei Lee, not present. Daniel Ng, not present. Wing Chung, not present. And Sherry Lowe, not present. This concludes your speakers, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. And we will now go into, let me tell you all, we will go into, we'll go downstairs for the closed session, and I'm gonna read this in a minute, and I wanna let you know we will do it here, if you all so choose. Okay then. With that being said, it is now 11:35 a.m., January 20, and the City Council will now go into closed session under Section 55.01 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: legal issues regarding the Trinity River Standing Wave. Thank you. Thank you. It is now 12:35 p.m., January 20th, 2016, and the City Council is now in regular session after having its executive session. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Moved.
Is there a second? All right, all of them in favor. And it is now 12:36 p.m., and this council briefing agenda meeting is adjourned.